Hey travelers, a quick reminder that the Bright Suns podcast is proud to be a supporter of the Amidala Initiative, which is a fundraising effort to help Equality Texas, who are doing everything they can to help protect trans youth and their families from some absolutely atrocious legislation being passed. The world is pretty messed up right now, but you can help make it a little bit better by donating to the Amidala Initiative. The link is going to be in the show notes below. You can also find the link in my link tree on Twitter. Anyway, on to the show.
When the time comes, he must be trained.
I'm about to end this man's whole career.
Like you trained his father?
Such a stupid moment. But anyway, Bright Suns travelers, welcome to the Bright Suns podcast, the show for pop culture nerds like myself to obsess over, dissect, love, cherish, and respect all things in the geekdom with a twist of positivity. My name is Mike, and this is episode, 15? 15, I think. Damn, it has been a minute since I've done an episode. It's been a crazy couple of weeks. Really a month. I've been so busy between work and then the past couple of weeks where I've had time to actually record, or I thought I would have time to record. I've been doing a bathroom renovation project, and it completely destroyed my sanity. But it is incredibly good to be back in front of the mic, and especially after a day like we had yesterday. Happy Star Wars Day yesterday. Obviously, it's May 5th, Revenge of the 5th today, but yesterday was May the 4th, be with all of you. And it was Star Wars Day, and it was just such a great day. The fandom was good. I didn't really see any examples of typical fandom BS. But most importantly, the Kenobi trailer dropped. And oh my God, it looks amazing. I did not think that it was going to look any better than it did with the teaser trailer that they dropped. But somehow, I am even more excited for the show. I didn't think that was possible. And it showed us a little bit more about what we're going to be getting in the show. And I got to say, the Grand Inquisitor's looking pretty good. You know, like all of the complaining that everybody did about the Grand Inquisitor and how he looks. And honestly, he looks fine. He looks great. I think he looks amazing. He doesn't necessarily look like the way he did in the animated series, but that's an animated series. It's fine. It doesn't matter. He looks fantastic. And the thing that's going to be important is how the character is played, obviously. So I think if he does well, if he does a good enough job doing the character, it's going to be fine no matter what he looks like. He could be blue and it wouldn't matter as long as he does the character justice. And we saw a bit more of Reva. I'm not exactly sure how to pronounce her name. I've just seen it spelled online, but I've never actually heard it said. So I'm going to go with Reva. I like Reva. But Reva, ooh, she looks like a badass. I might be rooting for her more than the Grand Inquisitor. I think the Grand Inquisitor is going to be intimidating, but I think Reva's going to be like the big bad for a while. Like, she is angry. I absolutely can't wait to see more of her. I am so intrigued by her character. I think, you know, what is it? Third Sister, I think is her name. Yeah, she's going to be absolutely intense, like so intense. And her line in the trailer when she's like screaming at Obi-Wan and saying, "You can't escape him," fucking goosebumps. I hope all of you had the same experience I did, because that was, oh my God, it was so good. And Kumail Nanjiani's in this. I did not realize he was in it. Was this like common knowledge? Because I saw a lot of people like calling it out as if it had kind of been known for a while. I had no idea. And, you know, they kind of showed him wearing, I mean, the clothes that he's wearing, it's entirely possible that he's just a guy on Tatooine. He's just some random Tatooine citizen. But it's also possible that he's wearing Jedi robes. It did kind of look like Jedi robes. So maybe he is an Order 66 survivor, like Obi-Wan, like Ahsoka, like all of them. And maybe that is who Obi-Wan is talking to when he says, stay hidden. I saw that theory online. I thought that was pretty cool. And I'm like, you know what? If they had a big name actor like Kumail on this, then yeah, I mean, I can't see them wanting to use him for just like some random, you know, everyday citizen. So awesome. If he plays a Jedi, that would be amazing. That would be amazing because so far we know of so few Jedi, but we keep hearing about more. So like, I think, you know, if he's a Jedi and he's a survivor, I'd love to know his backstory and maybe, you know, get some more information on him. Who knows? Maybe he's even going to show up in like Fallen Order 2. He could. Entirely a possibility. And, oh man, what else was there? There's Purge Troopers. So we got a look at the Purge Troopers, kind of, a little bit. Like, not really, like, crazy. But they look fantastic. And that's going to be exciting to see because these are like Death Troopers on steroids, the Purge Troopers. They're going to be absolutely bonkers. And you know, as much as I want to see Obi-Wan completely house Stormtroopers, like, you know, that's going to happen. He's going to just destroy Stormtroopers left and right. But, you know, Purge Troopers, if you've played Fallen Order, you know, these guys, you don't mess around with these guys. You know, you got to plan your attacks. You got to plan your moves because they don't fall for stuff the way normal Stormtroopers do. So I'd love to see them make the Purge Troopers like this really intimidating, kind of like a force to be reckoned with, you know, like, you know, not just an everyday Stormtrooper, not even like the Death Troopers from Rogue One, you know, where they're scary, but like, ultimately, they didn't do as much. I would love to see these Purge Troopers basically be on the level of Jedi, like, you know, which would only make the Inquisitors that much more intimidating. You know, like, it's going to be, I really hope that they do that because that would be absolutely insane. And obviously, like I played at the beginning of the show, very, very weirdly, Uncle Owen, he drops a burn on Obi-Wan straight from the comics. The "like you trained his father" line, that is, it's not exactly like word for word from the comics. The word for word from the comics was, "haven't you killed enough Skywalkers already?" But it's in the same vein. It's hitting the same note. It's hitting the exact same note, the exact same feeling of, you know, Obi-Wan, yeah, I get that you want to train the kid, but, you know, look what happened to Anakin. Look what happened. You fucked it up. But I think that line really indicates the kind of tension that we're going to get between the two. Like, there's really going to be so much tension between Uncle Owen and Obi-Wan. And I'm always going to call him Uncle Owen. I know that it's Owen Lars, but to me, he's always Uncle Owen. But I really feel like this tension between the two is going to be a major point of the show. It's not just going to be like, okay, we all know it's there, but now he's going to go, you know, Obi-Wan's going to go do his thing. I think this entire show is just very likely going to add. I have the word significant in the notes that I've written for this show, but significant does not seem like the right word. The amount of depth that this is going to add to episode 4 is unreal, unbelievable, unimaginable. This is going to add so much depth to A New Hope. Like, beyond, like, all of these characters are going to be so much more fleshed out than they ever have been before. And just like after watching Rogue One going into episode 4, and we had this new sense of depth about the entire situation and really a newfound respect for the rebellion for doing what they had to do in order to get the Death Star plans, and who had to be sacrificed. I think, you know, if we go and watch Kenobi, all six episodes, and then go watch A New Hope, oh my God, we're going to have, I think, a much deeper appreciation for episode four. I mean, you didn't think that it could get much deeper than that, but it's going to. I have a feeling. Plus, always the possibility that events that happen in this could very well lead into Ahsoka, the Ahsoka series, by lining up events that happened in Rebels. Obviously, this takes place, this takes place obviously, like, you know what, like 10 years or something after Order 66. Obviously, you know, Luke's a kid. He's a little kid. He's not old, but he's not a baby. And, you know, Rebels takes place, you know, during this time. So it's very likely that that this could lead into some events in Rebels. This could line up with events in Rebels. They could mention things in Rebels. So going from that, my predictions for Kenobi are going to be that the ties to Rebels is going to be strong. Like, Rebels will be mandatory viewing for most things going forward. Definitely for Ahsoka, but maybe even for Kenobi. So I think the ties, yes, the ties to Rebels will be very strong. I think there will be ties and links to Fallen Order, but I really think those are going to be some gentle ties, or maybe even just nods or kind of mentions. Like, you know, like the sisters and the sisters and brothers, the Inquisitors. Their number, if I'm not mistaken, I feel like their number kind of indicates their rank. So, like, second sister is higher than third sister, is higher than fourth sister, and all that. I think it would be a major missed opportunity if they didn't at least mention Trilla. You know, because you've got third sister right there in the show, Reva, whatever her name is. Obviously, her, like one up from her is Trilla, who is one down from the Grand Inquisitor. You know, like, if I'm understanding their ranking correctly. But if not, I mean, they're still just, you know, Trilla is one of them. And not to mention, let's not forget that the actors who lent their voices in Fallen Order also lent their faces. So it would be extremely easy to put them into the show to some degree. You could have the actress that played Trilla show up for a scene, even if it's 5 seconds. That would be incredible. And it would be also just a totally dope way to promote Fallen Order 2, if that's where they choose to go with it. But so I think the ties are going to be, they're going to be there. I think Rebels is going to be really the key to all of this. So I do think that if you haven't watched Rebels, you only have a couple of weeks now. You've been sleeping on it for too long. You got to go watch Rebels now. But I do think that a major element to the story will be the kind of respectful but slightly adversarial relationship between Owen and Luke. But this still needs to be Kenobi's journey. Like, this needs to be Obi-Wan's journey. So that, I think there's going to be an element of that, but I think maybe the scene that we saw where Owen burns Obi-Wan, like, really bad, I think that scene's probably going to be early on in Kenobi's journey, maybe where he's still clinging to the idea of the Republic and the old Jedi Order, and he's just thinking, okay, I got to get this kid trained to kind of restore some sense of normalcy, because now everything's upside down, you know? But I think because the thing that happened, and it always happens, is anytime even the slightest hint of any sort of adversarial relationship between any two characters that are not a, you know, protagonist and a villain, like two protagonists, the internet feels the need to take sides. And I have seen some absolutely atrocious Owen Lars slander on my timeline, and I will not stand for it, damn it. So people are saying that Obi-Wan was right and that Owen Lars is basically a villain for wanting to keep Luke from being a Jedi at an earlier age. And that is just flat out an absolutely horrid take. And thinking like that really invalidates the found family thing that Star Wars is literally based on. It's a fundamental tenet of Star Wars. And it's honestly just insulting to adopted kids. Again, like, I really feel like modern fans just can't stop insulting adopted kids who maybe find something to relate to in Star Wars, who maybe want to see their adoptive parents be like Owen Lars, you know? Owen Lars is trying his best to protect Luke. And it, you know, Owen Lars loves Luke. There is no doubt about it. Owen Lars loves Luke as if he were his own son. And by all rights, he really is. You know, Owen Lars raised Luke from the time he was a baby to the time, you know, ultimately till Owen Lars' death, Owen Emperor's death. So really, I mean, if you think about it, Luke is just as much, if not more, Luke Lars than he is Luke Skywalker. It's just that Luke Lars doesn't really roll off the tongue as much. But he's as much a Lars as he is a Skywalker. And I would say probably even more. But, I've got a little bit more to say on that. But the galaxy just sucks at the time of Kenobi. And maybe if any other Jedi had gone up to Owen and had said, we need to train the child, he wouldn't have been met maybe with the kind of hostility. But this is Luke Skywalker, the son of Darth Vader, literally the second most evil dude in the galaxy, and number two on the reasons why trillions of living beings are in the galaxy are suffering. And the guy who literally trained Darth Vader is in front of him saying he wants to train Luke. Obviously, the only possible reaction to that is exactly what Owen Lars did. This is a move to protect Luke from both the seemingly flawed and completely ineffectual Jedi Order, from Owen's point of view, as well as to protect the galaxy at large from Obi-Wan accidentally creating Vader 2.0. Because we've seen the outcome of Obi-Wan's training. You know, it turned into Anakin Skywalker, who turned into Darth Vader. So Owen reacting the way he did, that's how any good father would react to this situation. You know, if you were in a situation where, like, you know, you were raising a child whose father was the literal reason that, like, the entire galaxy just sucks to live in, and you know, you know that you might be able to get him somewhat of a normal life, as normal as you possibly can, given where he came from. You're gonna absolutely do whatever it takes to do that. That's how any good parent reacts. You're gonna do anything it takes to give this kid the best life that you possibly can. And Owen does not think that's with the Jedi. And Owen has every right not to think it's with the Jedi, because the Jedi don't exist. Because the guy that Obi-Wan trained killed him. Well, you know, helped kill him. Killed them, I should say. Okay. But, you know, Owen does kind of hold Luke back as he grows up. But it's not out of, like, malice or just enjoyment of having, like, a physical laborer around to do work. It's still to protect him. It's still because Owen loves Luke like a son. And Luke isn't, like, 30 in episode 4. He's what? He's 16, 17? He's a teenager. Of course he still loves him like a son, because he's still a kid. But it's still to protect him. Because he knows that the minute he lets this kid go off and discover the universe at large, you know, that name is going to get him into trouble, Skywalker. He's going to go out and say, hey, I'm Luke Skywalker. And they'll be like, oh, like Anakin Skywalker, who was killed by Darth Vader? As far as the galaxy knows, Anakin is dead. You know, Darth Vader killed him. And, you know, some people know that Anakin is Darth Vader, but, like, you know, everybody knows that Anakin was bad. I think I don't know the actual whole thing about this, but I think the entire galaxy knows that Anakin is Darth Vader. It, you know, everybody but Luke. Or at least the people in the know, the people who are important, who would eventually find him. Not to mention, you know, Owen Lars is living in this part of the timeline where, you know, Jedi are being hunted and killed or converted. So he walks around with this name Skywalker. Yeah, it's going to alert some fucking people, don't you think? But yeah, it's Luke is still, he's very much a child of both Owen and Beru and Anakin and Padme. He is every bit both of those families' children. Like, it's the argument of nature versus nurture. You know, he's got Skywalker blood, but he's got Owen and Beru training. You know, it's Lars software on Skywalker hardware. That's what it is. But even if the way that my brain thinks about all this, and I'm sorry if I'm rambling, I have notes, but it's hard to like follow along with them because my brain just wants to blah all of this stuff out all at once. And I talk with my hands a lot and I've almost hit my microphone like 9 times already. But the way my brain thinks about it is all is as the Force wills it. We know this from Rebels, from The World Between Worlds. You can't change the timeline. It happened. It was going to happen. It's always going to happen. Because if you try to change anything, you can't. If you try to change anything, what you changed is why it happened in the first place. Like that's the timeline is set. You can't change anything. So all is as the Force wills it. And we know that the Force willed Anakin. You know, he was born of the Force. So maybe it was also the Force who brought together Shmi and Clea, what is his name? Clea Glars? You know, Owen's father? But maybe the Force brought them together so that when Anakin fell to the dark side and Padme was killed, Luke could carry on the Skywalker power, but be molded by the humility and humbleness of the Lars family. The Force willed all of that together in order to forge Luke Skywalker into this perfect form of himself. You know, one that grew up under the Lars name, well, under the Lars family, under the Skywalker name, but under the Lars family, molded by their teachings, who really raised him to be the kid that he is, and hold the power of the actual physical Skywalker genes. You know? Like, I think the Force knew that was needed. So the Force willed it into existence, just like it does with everything. All is as the Force wills it. But we also have a skewed view of maybe our opinion on Owen, because what we know, you know, we know what Luke is going to become. We know. We are essentially the Force, where we know what's going to happen. And we can't change that because that's already happened to us. But that wouldn't have happened without Owen and Beru. Had Luke been trained early, had you know, Obi-Wan Kenobi taken him when he was a very young child, who knows what could have happened? The Luke we love is only the Luke we love because he was shaped by the Owen and the Beru who loved him too. So with all of that said, I will absolutely not tolerate any Owen and Beru Lars slander on my timeline. None. I love those two. They did exactly what any good parent would do. They're protecting their child. They're trying to give them the best life that they can. They are not Jedi. You know, they have seen what a republic under the Jedi becomes the Empire. The Jedi were weak. The Jedi were ineffective. Anyway, well, let's take a quick break so that I can pay a little bit of the bills. And we'll be right back. And what we're going to talk about when we get back, y'all saw it on my timeline. Y'all saw it on my Twitter. Rose Tico. We're going to be talking about Rose Tico when we get back. Welcome back. Now to talk about Rose Tico. And if you follow me on Twitter, you probably saw that tweet that went, I don't know, semi-viral, a little viral. Like, there was a few thousand likes and a lot of comments and a lot of DMs from very angry white boys. Let's start this whole thing off. I want to play the segment, the line that Rose Tico says that I believe with my whole heart, and no one has ever been able to convince me otherwise, that Rose Tico says the most important line in all of Star Wars history. So here we go. I'm going to play that line for you right now.
That's how we're going to win. Not fighting what we hate. Saving what we love.
Oop, there we go. Almost played it twice. Anyway, that is the line. That's how we're going to win. Not by fighting what we hate, but by saving what we love. I firmly believe that this line is the entire thesis of the entire Skywalker saga. And I had so many people try to argue otherwise, but I'm not convinced by any of their arguments because they really weren't great arguments. But anyway, I'm going to break it down per trilogy. And that's really kind of how this needs to be broken down is per trilogy. The original trilogy, I actually do have notes like broken down per movie, but if you break it down per trilogy, this line, this one line, this one, what is said to be a throwaway line, is the thesis of the entire saga. So starting off with the prequel trilogy, the argument that I saw was the most prevalently was that Anakin was trying to save what we love, or Anakin was trying to save what he loved, and look what happened. And the thing that I have to say back to that is that motivations matter. And yes, Anakin was trying to save what he loved, but if you really break it down, and this is why I don't like ever reviewing a movie unless I've seen it a few times. Because if you just look at any of these things with a very like high level surface glance, like you don't do the analysis that's required in order to really break down a story and really break down the themes of the story, then you're going to have these kind of ideas like, well, Anakin was trying to fight for what he loved. Anakin was trying to save what he loved, and look what happened. See how it turned out? No, because like I said, motivations matter. Anakin always struggled with attachments, but his focus was always kind of inward. Something that was exploited, if not outright manufactured, by Palpatine. You know, Palpatine saw that this kid is really struggling with attachments. And you know, I'm sure that in the years between episode one and episode two, because we don't really see any of those years, do we? I'm sure Palpatine was constantly this little voice in his ear that was like, no, you can't let them take that away from you. You can't let them take this away from you. You are the chosen one. You are this person, like kind of building up his ego to the point where these attachments that he has are more focused on him. The inward focus, meaning he can't lose someone. He needed the attachments. He needed to be strong enough in order to save them. That changes the motivation. That changes the motivation from, you know, you need to be saved to I need to save you. I cannot lose you. I cannot lose. And that's where I think the key is to all of this. Anakin's attachments were always deeply inwardly focused. And as a child, we didn't really see much of that, more than just the line, your thoughts dwell on your mother. And the need for connections is human. It's normal. And I believe that them kind of lashing out against the attachments for his mother, I think that was more of a failing on the Jedi Order at this point in time. I don't think that it's necessarily a fault of Anakin, because he's a kid. He's lived with his mom his whole life. Of course he's going to miss his mom. Of course his thoughts are going to dwell on her. She is right now living as a slave on Tatooine. And, you know, he's over in this luxury high rise on Coruscant. Of course he's going to be thinking about his mom. He's scared. He's alone. He doesn't have her. He doesn't have the normal safety blanket that he always has. This is a normal thing. The longing for connection is human. And it can either be a strength, like what I think is the case with Rey and Ben, Or it can be a path to the dark side, like we saw with Anakin. Or neither. It's just a normal thing to want these kind of connections. But Anakin was manipulated to crave the power to save the ones he loves. And he's willing to kill or destroy anything in his path in order to do so, in order to get that power. Like, the dude killed kids. Okay, Anakin is not a good guy. I don't care what anybody says. The dude murdered children. Okay? That, like, redemption. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if chucking the Emperor over the edge is actually redemption for killing a bunch of children. But regardless, Anakin's not, you know, Anakin's not a great guy. But, you know, all of this, you know, seeking power and hurting the ones that you love in order to get that power, that really plays into a conversation that was had around the time of Infinity War, when Infinity War came out. And there was the scene where Thanos tossed Gamora over the edge, and people were losing their shit because they're saying that is, you know, a very bad interpretation of love. Because he had to throw what he loved the most over the edge. He had to sacrifice the thing that he loved the most in order to get the Soul Stone. And he was very abusive, obviously, to his children. And people were saying, you can't tell people that that is love. And I think that love is a difficult thing to quantify. You can't necessarily say what is and isn't love. You can only say what is and isn't healthy love, I think. But what Anakin felt was likely love to him. He, I do think, loved Padme with all his heart. And the fact that at the mildest of thoughts that she might be working against him gaining power, he straight up choked her out. Okay? I don't think that means that it was love based on things like empathy and respect. I think, you know, George's stilted dialogue. George Lucas was not great at writing dialogue, and I think he even admitted himself. He's not good at writing dialogue. But George's very stilted dialogue in the prequels really leads me to believe that what he had was more lust than love, because George always had him talking about how beautiful Padme was and how gorgeous Padme was and how soft Padme was. It was never things like, I, you know, respect your mind, I respect your beliefs, I respect the, you know, nothing about respect. That didn't come until the Clone Wars. I do think the Clone Wars really helped flesh out that relationship. And it really did kind of show the whole decline from, you know, this kind of appropriate, healthy love to a focus on power and that inward focus, which completely shifted Anakin's motivations. But I think something that would have really helped the movies, because I don't think the movies did a great job in explaining this love between Anakin and Padme, but I think the deleted scene, and I think everybody knows it, I think this would have helped that relationship a little bit more. It would have helped kind of formulate that and flesh it out. And the line is, spoken by Obi-Wan to Padme, "I'm not blind, Padme, though I have tried to be, for Anakin's sake, and for yours. Anakin has loved you since the day you met on that horrible junk shop in Tatooine. He's never even tried to hide it, though we do not speak of it. We pretend that I don't know, and I was happy to, because it made him happy. You made him happy when nothing else ever truly could." I think that line is absolutely unbelievable, because it really shows really the kind of love that Anakin had at one point for Padme. And I do think that it really drives the point home that what Palpatine did was disgusting, because he perverted that love. He perverted that attachment, and he used it against Anakin to fuel this desire for power and control. This kid who'd never had any sort of control. He grew up a slave. He never had any sort of agency or authority in his own life. And Palpatine used that to manipulate him into seeking that control And it was easy to because he was already kind of seeking that control anyway. And the Jedi maybe could have taught him how to deal with that. But the Jedi were also being manipulated by Palpatine. The entire galaxy was being manipulated by Palpatine into a war in which Jedi kind of go blind. So I think that line would have helped really, really solidify the relationship between Anakin and Padme in the way that it should have been. It would have proven that Palpatine is a disgusting, manipulative POS. And I think it would have helped the movie so much. And I, like I said, I think it really would have helped, you know, point out that at one point, Anakin was in the type of love that would have fit Rose's statement. But due to the manipulations and Anakin's unwillingness to let go of that power and control, that love got twisted up and Padme was lost to that. And that's why, in the end, even though Anakin was, quote unquote, trying to save what he loved, it didn't work because the motivation was wrong. The motivation was on the power to save the ones that he loved. It was on the ability. He needed to get stronger. He needed to destroy everything that stood in his way in order to save what he loved. That's not right. He could have easily saved Padme if he had just not listened to Palpatine, not even listened to the Jedi. You know who he should have listened to? Padme. Talk to Padme. She was right. You could have had a conversation with her between Anakin and Padme. If there was no Palpatine in the middle, the two of them, boom, could have solved the whole thing in one movie. But Anakin didn't do that. He tried to destroy what he hated while keeping the thing that he loved, and that's just not sustainable. Obviously, he did not win. He just survived. And that's when we get into the original trilogy. And the original trilogy, the argument that I saw on this post that I kind of triggered this whole episode, was that in the original trilogy, Luke never saved what he loved, and he still won. That is one of the worst arguments I have ever seen. Because I feel like if you have that argument, you never watched the movie, or you never watched it beyond just wanting to see a whiz-bang action movie. You need to watch movies more than once in order to really form an opinion on them, I think. You know, I don't think you can adequately form an opinion on a movie, an opinion based on analysis and thought and all of that stuff, unless you've seen a movie more than once. And granted, there's movies that I don't want to watch more than once. I've seen them and I'm like, yeah, not my thing. But for a lot of movies, you need to watch them more than once to really analyze and engage. So if you have that argument that Luke never saved what he loved and yet he won, I can literally break this down per movie on how he did that. So Luke did not have a love interest in the entire trilogy. He didn't have a boyfriend or girlfriend. Luke did not need a boyfriend or girlfriend in order to have love. No one does. Love encompasses so much more than just who you're trying to bang, right? Like Luke loved Leia. Luke loved Han. Luke loved Obi-Wan. Luke loved Chewbacca. Luke loved so many people in the rebellion. I'm telling you, it is okay to love your friends and to tell them that you love them. And you really should tell them you love them before you don't have that opportunity to anymore. I tell my friends I love them all the time. Like, guys out there especially, you really need to drop the toxic masculinity stuff and really just open up to your friends. Tell them, I love you, okay? I love my friends. And I do. And that is a very weird way of saying episode four. Let's get started. All right, so episode four, very quickly, it didn't dive into the topic of, you know, saving what you love versus fighting what you hate. Yes, he's fighting to destroy the Death Star. But it's not because he hates the Empire. Again, motivations matter. The reason he's fighting is to protect his friends on Yavin, because the Death Star is threatening that. So he needs to protect his friends. And there's no time to escape. There's no time to run anywhere. The only option that he has left is to destroy the Death Star. And that's exactly what he does. He saves what he loves, and that's why he won. But again, looking at it as a whole trilogy, that's kind of flimsy, right? Like, I'll admit, that is kind of flimsy. But that's why we're looking at this as trilogies and not individual movies. But even then, it's still able to be proven in a single movie. Then we move on to probably one of the greatest movies ever made, Empire Strikes Back. And Luke literally leaves his Jedi training early in order to save his friends. If you did not catch that, then you did not watch the movie, because it is painfully obvious. He is not trying to do anything other than save his friends. Yes, he's falling for a trap, but it's ill-advised, according to Yoda and Obi-Wan. But in the end, that's the old Jedi way of thinking. That's the old Jedi code talking there. It's not necessarily them thinking that it's not the best idea, because in the end, had he not gone, he wouldn't have faced off against Vader, which apparently was his big final test to being a Jedi. And he failed. But the seeds of that lesson of failure are something that would be planted for plucking in the sequel trilogy. And I love that. I love that they did that. Oh my God, I love that they did that so much. Okay, I have such deep love for all of these movies, and I love that there's like 40 years of history in all of these. It's amazing. Anyway, Vader attempts to goad Luke to fight with hate. And he's saying, the only way to beat me is to fight with hate. And that's not even the reason that he went there in the first place. Luke didn't go there to fight with hate. He didn't go there to destroy Vader. He went there to save his friends. Now, his friends, they were already on their way out. You know, Han had already been frozen in carbonite. So he's gone. You know, he's off being flown by Boba Fett to Tatooine. The rest had managed to make their way out. And so he obviously trapped. It was meant to lure him there. Yes, and it worked. But Vader attempted to shift his motivations, manipulating him just like Palpatine did. So Vader tries to shift his motivation to destroying him, to fighting what he hates, because that's going to lead to the dark side. And, to prove that, I have a clip. So I'm going to play that clip just where he says that line. And that, obviously, this is where it came from. So here we go.
Obi-Wan has taught you well. You have controlled your fear. Now, release your anger. Only your hatred can destroy me.
So, right there. Only your hatred can destroy me. Well, that's not even the reason that he's there, right? The reason that he's there was to save his friends. Something that is completely irrelevant now because his friends are gone. They managed to make their way out. So at this point, the only reason that he's saying that is to lure him in to the dark side, to shift his motivations from saving what he loves to fighting what he hates. And obviously, after that point, right before, chopping his hand off, or I think right as he chopped his hand off, he attempts to lure him in with the promise of power. Join me and we can rule the galaxy as father and son. And Luke obviously resists, drops himself into the vent and whatever, blah, blah, blah. We know how it ends. So there, he was saving what he loved, but he was kind of manipulated into trying to fight what he hates. So again, he didn't really win. And that's the point of episode 5, is that it did not end on a happy note. He didn't win. He just survived. And that's where we go on to episode 6, The Return of the Jedi. And if there is a single film that encompasses Rose's thesis, it's this one. And it's primarily, if not only, in the final fight against Vader and Palpatine. And I love this movie so much. I love this scene because it so encapsulates the good parts of the Jedi and the good parts of saving what you love. And oh my God, it's just such a good scene. Anyway, Palpatine is attempting to manipulate both of them, Vader and Luke, as he always does. And Vader uses Luke's attachment to Leia to trigger Luke into fighting with hate, and it fucking works, right? Like, he starts swinging at him, and he is fighting with every bit of hate he can muster. And he even goes as far as to chop off Vader's arm, his robot arm. And he sees what he's become. Luke sees what he's falling victim to. And he sees that the Emperor is happy about it, which means it can't be good. And he realizes that what he's doing is fighting what he hates. He's trying to destroy Vader. He's trying to destroy the Emperor. And that's not what's going to allow him to win. Luke realizes this. I don't know if he knows that he realizes this, or if it was just a feeling in the Force. So what he does is he switches off his lightsaber. He throws it aside. So all you people saying that he would never throw his lightsaber, yeah, he did it already in episode 6. He throws his lightsaber aside, and Luke appeals to the good that he feels in the Force and his father, and Anakin saves his son. That's, he does what he has to do to get Palpatine away from Luke. And as I've mentioned before a dozen times, motivation matters. And Anakin would have saved Luke whether he killed the Emperor or not. Okay, the intention was not to kill the Emperor. It wasn't, I need to kill the Emperor because he's hurting my son. It was, I need to save my son from the Emperor. And it's a little change like that that completely alters the motivation and completely alters the kind of good or badness of it. And Vader, you know, Anakin at this point, because he'd kind of converted back, was presented with no other options other than to chuck him down the shaft, right? It was the only option available to him. And I have never felt that the sacrifice was intentional, that Anakin's sacrifice was intentional. I don't see him as like jumping in front of the Emperor's lightning to hit him instead of Luke. You know, he literally just picked up the Emperor, and the Emperor started attacking Vader instead of Luke. So I have never seen the sacrifice as I need to die in order to protect my son. It was just literally, this thing is attacking my son. My son is in danger. I love him. I need to get this zappy monster away from him. And that's all it was. It just happened to be a thing that killed him. You know, he got too damaged and, you know, had that moment where he got to finally see his son with his own eyes and then died. Like, I don't see it as being intentional. That's my thoughts. You can have your own. That's why these things are amazing. But Anakin won. He finally won. He finally saved what he loved instead of, that's another part, instead of fighting what he hates. And he wasn't trying to gain power, and he wasn't trying to do anything other than save his son. And he finally won. It took a lifetime to finish, but he finally did it. And then we get into the sequel trilogy. Here we are, folks, the movie, the sequel trilogy, that brings this line to life. You know, 40 years of Star Wars movies, and we finally get there. So Rose says this line to him after saving Finn from foolishly throwing himself into the cannon that was going to bust open the door. So again, I'm going to play that line for you because I think it's so important. Here we are.
That's how we're going to win. Not fighting what we hate. Saving what we love.
So obviously, we're going to rewind a bit because the argument that I saw was Finn was trying to save what he loved, Rey and the Resistance, but Rose took that away. And again, I have to say this every time. Please actually watch the movies before you start coming up with any arguments, because if you actually listen to that scene again, I want you to tell me where Finn's motivations are. Because I'll say it again, motivations matter. I've said it 1,000 times. Listen, I'm going to play the scene, and you're going to tell me where Finn's motivations are. Here we go.
They're picking us all off. We're not gonna make it.
All right, make my final approach. Target in sight. Guns are hot.
Now, pull off!
What?
The cannon is charged! It's a suicide run!
All craft, pull away!
No, I'm almost there!
Retreat, Finn!
That's an order! I won't let them win!
That line, right there.
No! Finn!
No.
Listen to Paul! We have to retreat!
No, I won't let them win. That is not something you say when you're trying to save what you love. That is something you say when you're fighting something you hate. Right? If you actually watch the video of that scene too, at no point does Finn's facial expressions indicate anything other than pure, unbridled contempt. He hates the First Order for what they did. He hates the First Order so much. And Finn had only just before this learned what it means to truly commit himself to a cause that's greater than himself and to stand up instead of running away. But what he hadn't learned yet was the lesson that Poe learned, which is why all of these stories interconnect and why this movie, The Last Jedi, is such a great, well-written movie is because each character starts in a certain place, ends in another, and has impact on every other character's arc, and their story, their progression. Rian Johnson is a genius for doing this. This movie is actually incredibly well-written. And apparently, it's obvious to people who study film. They have argued that this movie is actually one of the better written movies of all Star Wars. And it's, I get it. I'm not going to complain, and I'm not going to say that anyone's worse for not liking this movie or anything. It's, if you didn't like it, you didn't like it. I'm just asking that you allow other people to like it. But anyway, Poe had just learned the real meaning of leadership and what the cause really needs, instead of what his ego and his pride think it needs. So at the beginning of the film, Poe literally sacrifices dozens of bombers and fighters, and more importantly, pilots and people and fighters and people. I can't say that enough. People. Actual people. Souls. Living, breathing people. And he does all this to take out one dreadnought ship. And he says that it's a fleet killer. Okay. Well, you just killed the fleet. The Resistance lost so much ability to fight because Poe wanted to destroy what he hated. Poe also learning the lesson that Rose says. And he wasn't even there. How amazing is that? That's why this movie is amazing. The whole reason there's so few of them left to save at the end is because Poe sacrificed so many at the beginning of the film. So the Resistance does nothing if everyone who could fight ends up dead. Dead soldiers do not win wars. And believe me, if there was anybody that I would have believed would have been the one to sacrifice themselves, it was going to be Poe, until he learned what it really means to be a leader and what the cause really needs. And that the cause needs living soldiers, and that you are not the fire. You are the spark that lights the fire. And you need to survive in order for that fire to light. So let's also consider, going back to Finn now, that Finn's importance to the Resistance is better served as a living legend than a dead one. And I think Poe understands this. Poe sees things in Finn, especially now that he understands the value of leadership and what it takes to lead this cause. I think he sees that he can't do it without Finn, and that Finn can do a whole lot for the Resistance that being dead is not going to help. There's also absolutely no guarantee that his sacrifice would have amounted to anything other than him being a smear on the inside of a very still-functioning cannon. Those skiffs were not very solid. And let's just say that the skiff didn't fall apart completely as it got into the mouth of the cannon. And let's just say that he got in, crashed into the cannon, and it completely exploded and destroyed and whatever. This is the First Order we're talking about. They have more guns. They have more cannons. They have more walkers. They have more of everything. That's the idea. They have more. They have a lot more. The Resistance is not the better armed faction in this. They are the worse off faction. They are the underdog. So Finn dies, blows up this thing, and the First Order drops another one. And then what? You've got a dead Finn, and the First Order knocks the wall down anyway, like they did anyway. This was Finn's Poe moment from the beginning. So he was willing to sacrifice so much more than absolutely necessary just out of hate for the First Order. So Rose saves him. That's something that Poe didn't have the luxury of at the beginning. Poe didn't have a Rose. He had Leia and Holdo in his head telling him not to, that he should have listened. But he didn't, and he sacrificed far more than he needed to just to hurt the First Order. Finn has Rose. Rose saved him. Now, before anybody says it, you know, because I understand how podcasts work, you know, you can talk to me during the podcast and I can hear it. I'm just kidding. I'm being sarcastic. Obviously, I have no idea what you're saying right now. But before anybody tells me in the comments when I share this on Twitter, yeah, did Rose teleport? Maybe. Is that important? Hell no. Like, it doesn't matter. I'm sorry. Are you watching Star Wars and you're expecting, like, realism and physics? This is Star Wars. This is space wizards and laser swords, okay? This is, at the surface, it's fantasy. And then if you dig deeper, you get themes and you get the good stuff. The deep stuff is where all this good stuff is that I'm talking about. Physics and teleportation? Who cares? Who cares? It doesn't matter. Oh my God, it does not matter. I saw that argument so many times as if it was a gotcha moment. No, it doesn't matter. Who cares? She teleported. Whatever. She saved him. But ultimately, it's just like totally sidetracked. Ultimately, this is what saved the galaxy. Rose saving Finn was what saved the galaxy, because if Finn were not alive, and for some reason, I don't know why, so many people are just so insistent that Finn had to die. But if Finn weren't alive to make this, you know, to again make the sacrifice play in The Rise of Skywalker, to destroy the ship that was guiding the other ships off of Exegol. And yeah, you can look at that and say, okay, but now he's sacrificing himself again. Why? How is this any different? Well, one, he's not trying to fight what he hates. Because if you watch him the entire time, he's not fighting the First Order because he hates the First Order. He has taken Rose's lesson to heart. He's not fighting the First Order to fight the First Order. He's fighting the First Order to save his friends. He needs to take down these ships because he has people all over the galaxy that he loves, whether that's romantic love, platonic love. There's all sorts of love that's good. He loves his friends. He loves Rey. He loves Poe. He loves all of them. He needs to save them. And the only way to do that and to make sure that they are alive is to destroy the ship. And yes, he's on it. So it's the sacrifice play, but he's not doing this to just take down one thing to hurt the First Order. Motivations matter. I don't know how many times I need to say that. Motivations matter. And this was clearly depicted in the movie. He needed to save his friends. He saved what he loved. And you know what? Lando saved him. And I don't care. That scene was amazing. The Rise of Skywalker is so good because I get so misty thinking about the end of that movie. It is so good. I enjoy it so much. But every single time in Star Wars, someone saves what they love instead of fighting what they hate, they win every single time. And when they fight what they hate, they don't. They either die, they sacrifice way too much, or they merely survive. And motivations matter. Motivations matter. If you're not doing it for the right reasons, you don't win. And Rose Tico's throwaway line was actually the most important line that has ever been spoken in Star Wars. And it was said by the character that if you post on Twitter anything nice about her, you get hundreds of just terrible comments, and you get threats in your inbox, in your DMs, saying that, you know, they're gonna find a way to close your account down. And I cannot believe that Rose Tico gets that much hate when she is that important of a character. Now, I do think that I did not like the way that her character was kind of sidelined in The Rise of Skywalker. I think there was a more important story to tell. And from what I've heard, it involved Carrie Fisher. It involved Leia a lot. And because of her death, they had to they had to change things, which I believe really altered the tone of the movie and also altered how much of Rose was being presented in the movie. And I think it's unfortunate. I think it was just an absolute unfortunate thing that happened. And they chose to go with the easiest way to release the movie on time, which unfortunately meant cutting a lot of Rose's scenes. And unfortunately, it was Rose. It was not another character. And I think it's just kind of the way that it played out. I don't think it was intentional. I think it was just, unfortunately, Rose is the character who had the most interaction with Leia. And it was perceived as you know, them sidelining Rose because of all the hate she got from The Last Jedi. Now, I could be wrong. It could very well be because of all the hate that she got from The Last Jedi. But at the same time, all that does is say that the haters ruined a potentially great thing in Star Wars. So, moral of the story, stop fighting what you hate, save what you love. And if you don't love Star Wars, move on. There's so many other things out there that you can be saving instead of trying to fight. That's the lesson that Rose Tico taught me, and that sticks with me. I can't, that's all I got to say. It sticks with me. That's all the time I'm going to take for you guys today. Thank you so much for listening. I know this one, I feel like this one's going to be kind of a slog. I hope you guys enjoyed this one. If you did, you know, let me know. Shoot me a message on Twitter, at Bright Suns Media. Pretty much all over social media, at Bright Suns Media. I don't post to Facebook or anything, and I have a Discord server, but it's like not really set up, so I'm not really ready for that. But mostly Twitter, at Bright Suns Media. You can also email me, mike@brightsunsmedia.com. Let me know what you think. And if you have a moment and you like the show, consider going on to wherever you're listening to this podcast and throwing it a rating if you have the ability to rate podcasts on it. I don't know which ones do. But just throw me a 5-star. Let me know. Help me out. Again, thank you guys so much for listening. I love each and every single one of you, and I am willing to save you. Thank you guys so much. May the Force be with all of you and have a fantastic May. Oh my God, it's going to be so good. I am so excited and I can't wait to spend the entire month telling you guys all about all of this awesome stuff. May the Force be with you. Have a fantastic day.